Good morning and live from the Ron Scott Communications Center. This is From the Stand. I'm Steve Buss, and today we welcome Ron Kaplan from the Ohio Air and Space Hall of Fame. We'll hear about flying into Oshkosh in an A-26 from a 16-year-old who was on board that airplane. And he's got quite a great story, and we'll also talk about life aboard the aircraft carrier flight deck. But first, we're going to talk to Jim Less, who is with NASA. He is a test pilot for the X-59 Quest program. And Jim, welcome back to Oshkosh.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the X-59 program. I know we've talked about it in the past, but you made some pretty significant leaps forward in the recent past.
Absolutely. This year I can say we've finally flown the airplane and are learning a little bit more about it. But for background, the X-59 is designed to fly supersonic without creating a loud sonic boom.
Right.
That all supersonic airplanes up to this point have had. We're trying to pave the way for faster commercial travel across the country. The Concorde could only fly over the ocean because of the sonic boom and all the rules prohibiting supersonic flight over land. So we're going to show that you can make a quiet supersonic airplane. We're going to gather data on that, provide it to the FAA so they can change the rules, and pave the way for getting there twice as fast.
Okay.
What we're hoping.
Good. Now, you mentioned that the airplane has flown. Has it actually flown faster than the speed of sound already?
It has.
Okay.
We did our first flight last October, and we're now up to 19 flights. Most of those flights have been this year since March through about now. And in the last three flights, we got supersonic.
Okay.
The first supersonic flight, I got to take it to 1.1 Mach. 1.2 Mach on the flight after that. My colleague Nils Larsen did the last flight and got all the way to 1.4 Mach and 55,000 feet.
Wow.
Which is what we consider our design conditions. That's where we need to show the quiet sonic thump.
Okay. And when what is the altitude that you actually go supersonic?
We can go supersonic down in the 40s, but really to get the sonic thump that we want and to hit 1.4 Mach, we're up above 50,000 feet, 50 to 55,000.
Okay, so this would be beyond where a conventional airliner would be, right?
Absolutely. And most military fighters even don't go above 50 because if your cabin were to depressurize, that you could have decompression sickness. We wear a partial pressure suit, similar to what the F-22 pilots use. That's actually good up to 60,000 feet.
Okay. So is the goal then of the program, now that you've demonstrated that it's not a sonic boom, it's a thump, right? So a sonic boom could be, I don't know what the decibel range is, but it's probably over 100 decibels on the ground for a sonic boom. And here in Wisconsin, we do hear those every once in a while because we have a military operations area with F-35s out of Madison. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, someone will make a turn a little too tight and rattle the windows. But with this technology, how much lower is that decibel level?
So we're targeting 75 decibels. Decibels, not a linear scale, so that is significantly quieter than 100.
Right.
The scientists predict that it'll sound like your neighbor slamming their car door.
Okay.
In a loud environment, in a crowded room, you probably wouldn't even hear it.
Okay.
Another big difference is a normal sonic boom is very sharp. It'll rattle the windows, set off car alarms. This is more of a muted sound that won't have all those adverse effects.
Good. What's the next step for the program then?
So we're in the middle of envelope expansion.
Okay.
We've gotten to our design condition, but there's a lot of other points along the way. We haven't done much low speed. We haven't done lower and faster, things that just make it a little more efficient to operate, to get to and from the cruise condition. So we need to finish that over the next month or two. We should be done with that. We're calling that phase one.
Okay.
Our phase two, we're going to go out. The scientists will then get their hands on measuring the sound, measuring the shock waves, getting all that data to show that the design's performing the way it's supposed to in terms of the sound.
Okay. And after phase two, is that when you go to the FAA?
Phase three is where we then go fly around the country at some select locations. We'll have volunteers in the community, and we'll be flying over making our sonic thumps and see whether they hear it, see how disruptive it is to their day. And trying to figure out what that decibel level, since, again, it's not just decibel level, it's mm-hmm. the shape of the sound wave and whether it's a sharp crack or a more of a muted rumble. So we'll try to find out where that sweet spot is that it's acceptable to the public.
Good. What airplane is the X-59?
It's a unique airplane. It's a one-of-a-kind. It is based on, or we've used components from a lot of different airplanes.
Okay.
But it is a unique design. The cockpit is based on the rear cockpit of a T-38 trainer. We've used the same canopy, the same ejection seat, so we don't have to develop all that from scratch. The engine is a GE-414 out of a Super Hornet. Modified a little bit since it's single engine versus dual.
Right.
We have F-16 landing gear. We have a lot of components out of F-16s and F-18s. The control stick, interestingly enough, is from an F-117. So, and then we have avionics inside, kind of a modified version of Rockwell Collins Proline Fusion designed for King Airs and Citations, I think. So a unique design, because we don't have room for all their displays. We just have two. It's a single-seat fighter, or single-seat aircraft, the X-59. And then another unique aspect of it is that because of the long nose on it, we can't see in front of us. There's no forward windscreen. So we're looking through a TV camera, looking at a screen, which gives us basically the same visibility if there was a window there.
Sure. And what's the reason for not having a front window?
It's really just the shape, so that we don't set off a shock wave there. It's a long, skinny nose, and if you made that transparent, then you'd be looking at such an angle, you wouldn't really be able to see anything out of it anyway. So
wow, okay. And so when you're here and you start explaining this to AirVenture attendees, especially home builders, I'm sure their eyes get wide, because many of the home builders do the same thing, take components of other aircraft and put together something brand new. What's it like to fly?
It's a pretty good flying airplane, actually. It flies like the simulator. We've been flying a simulator for years and years. We figure we've each done probably 1,000 landings in the simulator. There was a lot of concern about the landing characteristics of it. At low speed, it turns out it flies better than the simulator.
Okay.
The nose does move around a lot, a little bit of yaw left and right, pitches. It's a little pitch sensitive. But turns out it's not as bad as the sim. It flies pretty nice. Once we're up at 250 knots, 300 knots, it actually flies very well. You can hand fly it. We have pretty good autopilot, auto throttle system, but you can hand fly it just as well.
Okay.
Flies pretty smooth. In turbulence on landing, it's wallowing around a lot. But and the autopilot, we've got an autopilot to assist with that. It turned out the pilot does better than the autopilot for that. I've had to click that off a few times and just bring it on in. And it lands pretty nicely. Has more ground effect than we expected, and that cushions the landing. So it wants to float. You actually have to kind of plant it on the ground to get it stopped. Very slick airplane.
Mm-hmm.
From altitude, getting down is a challenge. We don't have any kind of drag devices, so you're in idle and you're going 275 knots, which is what we're cleared to right now, and just waiting and waiting, taking a couple extra spins to get down to the altitude you need.
Good. Jim Less is a NASA test pilot. How does one become a NASA test pilot? That's kind of a rare breed.
It is unique. There's not a lot of us. You need to be in the right place at the right time, but also have the right qualifications. Most of us were military. I was an Air Force pilot, Air Force test pilot. I was hitting my 20 years and wondering what I was going to do next, and this job opportunity presented itself. And when they offered me the job, I put in my papers and basically moved from one side of the base to the other. We're out at Armstrong Flight Research Center. I was stationed at Edwards Air Force Base, which is where the bulk of Air Force test pilots are. And started going to work on a different part of the base and wore a different uniform. Doing a lot of the same things, working with a lot of the same people.
Good. X-59, that means there were probably some projects before that. What are some of the projects that are coming after this?
So that's an excellent question. I'm pretty much focused on the X-59 okay. right now. We've had, I know we had the X-57. That never quite got off the ground, though the scientists learned a lot from that. That was an electric airplane. We were talking about the X-66, a truss-braced wing, just looking for a more fuel-efficient design. Okay. That one's probably not going to fly, but again, the engineers are learning a lot from the work they're doing on that. So, but the future looks bright for aviation. There's a lot of exciting things out there. We're working on going faster. People are working on making planes safer, greener, more fuel efficient. So a great time to be in aviation and in flight tests.
Good. With the initials NASA, National mm-hmm. Aeronautics and Space Administration, yes. a lot of people focus in only on the space program, and that is exciting, and it's
Absolutely.
Very loud, and you know, but aeronautics has always been a part of NASA's mission.
Absolutely.
And the things that you're talking about are really playing into that mission. And where do you now? It's 120, almost 125 years since the Wright brothers' first flight right. to where we are today. Mm-hmm. And we've gone from going very, very slow. In fact, we have a Wright B flyer replica here. So when you uh-huh. look at that compared to the X-59, if you had a crystal ball, where do you see things going in the future?
There's definitely a lot of interest in hypersonics right now, okay. Going even faster than in Mach 3, Mach 4. Hypersonics is really where you start worrying about things heating up.
Right.
And things start glowing red, and you have to make sure that your materials will handle that, and the engines are a challenge. So I think faster, definitely a way to go. Making planes safer. Everybody's talking about AI. I think right. there's a role for AI in helping the pilot make better decisions or keep track of things that they might not be thinking about.
Good. Jim, is there any airplane that you're looking forward to seeing here at AirVenture?
Oh, I like the Warbirds,
okay.
P-51s and whatnot.
Well, good. Well, while you were talking behind your shoulder, the Collings Foundation, or the Collings PBY, just was taxied into Boeing Plaza along with the privateer. So it's a good spot to be. Jim, if someone wants to find out more about what you're doing and what NASA is up to, where can they find you on site?
Okay. We are over in the NASA Pavilion.
Okay.
It's over on the northwest side there.
Okay.
Big NASA meatball on the tent. So come track us down. We have a lot of displays and a lot of folks there telling the public what we do.
Good.
And you can always go to our website, nasa.gov/quest, Q-U-E-S-S-T. We'll tell you what's going on with the X-59 and keep you up to date on our flight test progress.
Sounds good. Jim Less from NASA is our guest. When we come back, we'll talk with Ron Kaplan from the Ohio Air and Space Hall of Fame. And this is EAA Radio.